Well, early on, Josie and I, of course, wrote a lot of music for the Children's Corner. And people, I think their name was Bregman, Vacco, and Kahn, came and said, we will make a songbook for you, and we will pay for a record if you will sign over all your copyrights to us for $1 a piece. And we didn't know. I mean, we were babes in the woods. We signed all of the copyrights to those early songs to this music company. They fulfilled their part of the contract, which was making a long-playing record and a songbook. But they also owned the copyrights forever. And so some of those early songs, if I want to use them on the neighborhood, I have to pay to use them on the neighborhood. It seemed so unfair, and yet it's a good lesson. And for anybody who's watching or listening, it would be wise. Of course, I don't know that anybody these days are as I shouldn't say dumb, but well, I guess it was dumb, are as naive as Josie and I were at the beginning. But we've done fine. And there were some songs that I would be glad to use more, but I just don't schedule them because there's no sense when I can write another one that's just as good.
Okay, before we left off, we were talking about EEN.
Yes, the Eastern Educational Network asked us to build a half-hour program out of the material that we had from Canada, which was a 15-minute program. So we took the opening and close off the Canadian program and expanded them and used the Neighborhood of Make-Believe that was already produced, and we made 100 programs. And I asked Johnny Costa if he would help us. He was not involved in the Children's Corner. I was the one who did all of the playing in the Children's Corner. And I took him to lunch one day, and I said, we have this agreement to make 100 programs. I don't have very much money. Would you do it for us? He said, how much money do you have? I said, I have, for the music budget, I have $5,000. And he said, that's exactly what my son needs for this next year of college. I'll do it. So that's how that began. And of course, Johnny stayed with us until he died.
Who else was on the show?
On the early program? I remember knowing that we would have to have somebody who was in charge of props. And I talked with a friend of mine who knew David Newell. And he said, you know, the perfect person would be David Newell. And I said, well, where is he? He said, well, he happens to be in England at the moment. He had lived in Hawaii. David is the most eclectic man and wonderful person, as you know. And so we wired him in London, and he accepted the position, and he came back. And of course, that's how Mr. McFeely started. He did the props, but he also did speedy delivery. And as I say, when you look back, hindsight is much easier than foresight, but you look back and you think, all of these people came along at just the moment that they were needed. And it's still happening. You know, it's still happening. I had written a script thinking that this young Spanish-speaking man in California would be able to do this part. Just so happened he was teaching school, and just like him, he would not leave his class to come and tape for a week. He said, they need me at the end of the school year. So we found this other young man in New York who was delighted to do it. He's turned out to be wonderful. What can I say?
What about Betty Avalon? How did she join?
Oh, Betty came early on. We put out a general talent call saying that this was what we were going to do for the EEN, and anybody who was interested, please let us know. Well, Betty's former husband was a doctor here in Pittsburgh, and Betty's an accomplished actress, but she was living in Pittsburgh. So she knocked on our door and said, I sure would like to help. Well, she was a great addition, of course. And as a matter of fact, she's somebody who talks a lot about whimsy, too. She loves whimsy. And also Emily Jacobson was our poetry lady on the Children's Corner, as well as the early neighborhood programs. And Emily and Daniel had a relationship that was really tight. Emily taught Daniel his favorite poem, and it was written by a person by the name of Malik, I believe. And it says, if you can't be a pine on the top of a hill, be a shrub in the valley, but be the best little shrub by the side of the rill. If you can't be a woods, be a tree. If you can't be a highway, then just be a trail. If you can't be the sun, be a star. It isn't by size that you win or you fail. Be the best of whatever you are. And if you go out in the hall and go to the water fountain, right above the water fountain, you'll see that the rooms around there are dedicated to Emily Jacobson. And then it says, Beloved Poetry Lady of the Children's Corner and the Neighborhood. And then underneath it says, Be the best of whatever you are. Emily was from Britain. And she had seen the Children's Corner. And one day she just arrived at the station and said, Is there anything I could do for you? Well, with that accent, you know, when you're doing an hour a day, you're mighty glad for people to show up on your doorstep.
How about Joe Negri?
Oh, Joe's, as you know, a fabulous musician. And how did it start that he became Handyman Negri? I don't know, it seems like he's always been with us. But of course, Johnny Costa would have known Joe. And in fact, Johnny attracted a lot of first-rate musicians to the program. People wanted to come and play with John. And that's what it was. It was playing with people. You know, playing with people who just loved their métier, loved their craft. That's what we all did. In the very first, there was a visitor's gallery at WQED early on. Great, big, long visitor's gallery. Classes used to come from schools and things, and they'd just look down. It was on the second floor, and they'd look down these glass windows and watch us making the program. And I think what they got from that was, hey, here are people who are having a good time.
What about Robert Trow?
Bob Trow was a longtime member of the broadcast community in Pittsburgh. He was very well known on the radio, doing voices. And I just thought up these characters for him. In my child development work, I knew that very young children, as they were learning their language, once they had mastered their English, they loved playing with words. They loved to do nonsensical stuff. There's something about the tongue that likes playing with syllables. Well, that's how Robert Troll began. And I think Robert Troll was first, and then Bob Dog came later. But of course, Bob Tro played them both. But such a gifted man. I'll never forget the day he walked in the studio. You know, Studio A next door is very large. It's the largest studio in Pittsburgh. It's 80 by 80. And the neighborhood of make-believe takes almost the whole studio. It's so big. Bob Tro walked in one day and he looked at the whole place set up with the Eiffel Tower and the castle and the factory and the tree and Lady Elaine's museum go around and Daniel's clock and all of these fanciful places. And he said to everybody, you know, I remember when this was all farmland.
What, Chuck Aber?
Chuck Aber came later. He and Maggie Stewart were very close friends, and it was fun to develop Westwood for them. And I like the idea that Maggie is the mayor of Westwood, and Chuck is her associate mayor. Chuck is a very gifted actor, and so is Maggie. They both are fluent in sign language. They and Michael Moritz are the sort of new generation of the neighborhood. Michael is our new musical director. They've all known each other and grown up together. It's really fun to work with them. Chuck is so gifted and always so well prepared. And he and Maggie, when they go on personal appearances, the kids just love them. Karen, I've been blessed beyond measure with the people that I've worked with through the years. I mean, many of the people at Family Communications are here over 20-some years. You know, we just don't leave.
What about some of the puppets, the new puppets that you introduced on the show? Dr. and Mrs. Frog, Queen Sarah.
Yes. Well, King Friday thought that it would be nice to have a wife, and so Queen Sarah came along. Her name was Sarah Saturday, and she came along, and it gave us a chance to have a wedding on the neighborhood. It gave us a chance to have the birth of a child, to deal with that. And there was Harriet Elizabeth Cow. Sarah, of course, is the first name of my wife. My wife's name is Sarah Joanne. And so, of course, she would be the queen. But Queen Sarah,
I'm in charge. Let me see here.
Well, she's not here. But she's in charge of Food for the World. She's the president of Food for the World, which every once in a while they'll refer to. You know, she's going to have a meeting for Food for the World, and they collect stuff and take it all over the world. Harriet Elizabeth Cow, my aunt's name was Harriet Elizabeth Rogers, and so the teacher in the school is Harriet Elizabeth Cow, and Bob Tro did her voice, so we won't have her now. And there's Purple Panda. And Lady Elaine discovered Planet Purple, and of course that's where she met Purple Panda. You know, this is a history of a make-believe universe, you know. The ties are intricate.
Talk about some of the other puppeteers you had working with you. William Barker?
Oh, Bill Barker. Bill was a very good friend of mine from, he's a minister, and he was at the Bower Hill Church here in Pittsburgh and loved anything Scotch. In fact, he plays the bagpipes, goes to Scotland every year. He and I went to the Middle East two or three times, the Holy Lands, and it was his father-in-law who was vice president of the seminary. And Dr. Cotton said, you know, I'd like you to know my son-in-law. I think you all would get along famously. Well, he was right. Bill is a great scholar and a great person. And I love the voices that he does for the platypuses. And of course, Carol does the baby platypus, Anna. And Anna was named for Anna Freud. Anna Platypus. When I went to England one summer, I was able to go to the Hampstead Clinic, where Anna Freud and Dorothy Burlingham were in charge of this clinic. That's where Sigmund Freud, you know, moved after Vienna. They went to live in Hampstead, outside of London. And I remember one time sitting in a case conference with the people at Hampstead, and Anna Freud was there, and somebody else had presented this little girl. She was 5 years old. And this little girl had moved something like four times in her 5 years and had lots and lots of difficulties. And of course, they were all presented in this case conference. And at the end, I remember Miss Freud sitting back and saying, "What fascinates me so much about this little girl is how, with all the difficulty in her life, how she turns out to be so normal. That's what we must always try to understand." Well, that really impressed me. You know, no myopia with pathology. It's let's find out what makes children healthy and do all we can to give that to them. Well, I sure try to do that.
Talk about putting the show together. You write the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that process, picking the topics, the actual writing, who you consulted with.
Yes. Well, as long as Margaret was alive, she and I would talk about possible themes, and I would always, I remember even when I was in Nantucket, I would call her. One time, we decided that we should write a song about permissible regression. You know, regression in the service of the ego. And I thought long and hard, how can I do that? And I remember coming to me in Nantucket. I called her up and I said, "What do you think of this? Sometimes you feel like holding your pillow all night long. Sometimes you hold your teddy bear tightly. He's old, but he's still strong. Sometimes you want to snuggle up closely with your own mom and dad at night. You even need the light sometimes, but that's not bad. Please don't think it's funny when you want an extra kiss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this. Please don't think it's funny when you want the ones you miss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this." Well, she was so pleased. And the last verse, I mean, there are several verses, but I remember the last verse saying, and I remember, you know, writing this out in the workhouse, right there at the lip of the sea. Oh, there's nothing better for me than being right beside the sea. In the long, long trip of growing, there are stops along the way for thoughts of all the soft things and a look at yesterday, for a chance to fill our feelings with comfort and with ease, and then tell the new tomorrow, you can come now when you please. So please don't think it's funny when you want an extra kiss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this. Please don't think it's funny when you want the ones you miss. There are lots and lots of people who sometimes feel like this. Now, that's our response to what the people in the field of child development would say, permissible regression, regression in the service of the ego. In other words, stepping back and feeling that it's all right to do younger things in order for you to then later go forward.
Can you give me an example of how you would segue into that song?
We might have a theme in which King Friday and Queen Sarah have to go off somewhere to work for a whole weekend, and Chuck Aber would be the babysitter for Prince Tuesday, and Prince Tuesday would, they would have fun together until it was time to go to bed and the prince was starting to feel, I can't stay brave for this whole evening. And Chuck Aber would say, please don't think it's funny when you want an extra kiss or the ones you miss, you know. There are lots and lots of people who feel like this. And then that helps the prince know that he's not alone in those feelings. It also helps the people who are listening to what the prince and Chuck are saying to know that they're not alone. And that it's okay to many children will do what adults might consider inappropriate things for their age when they happen to be feeling stressful. Well, all they're doing is going back to an earlier time to help their feelings at the moment. It doesn't mean they're going to stay there all the time. It just means that they're regrouping so that they can take the next step in their own development.
Can you describe for those who may not have seen Mr. Rogers exactly how the format of the show?
I come in at the beginning of the program and sing Won't You Be My Neighbor? I just change into a sweater and sneakers, and often I bring something that that launches us into. I don't suppose it would be helpful to talk about the computer site, but that shows a lot of what we do. You know, the pbs.org/Rogers. Those sweaters that my mother made, you know, that was a, and just get comfortable and then talk with the children about what we might be doing. And then I might take them to a dance studio, or I might take them to a place where somebody's making pottery, or we might go to anywhere that might be of interest. In this last group of programs, we went to George Rhodes' place, where he manufactures these enormous ball machines that the balls go along these tracks and hit gongs. And I mean, those installations are huge. And we went to his place in Ithaca and taped with him. And he said, you know, it all starts with one idea. And oh boy, do I like children to hear that. You know, that's where everything begins.
Now, when you go to a place like that, do you talk to them beforehand, or do you go in and just want them to tell you and the audience at the same time about what they do?
Yes, invariably, I just want them to show what they're interested in. And hopefully they'll look enthusiastic about it still, you know. But I prepare the children for it. I tell them that I'd like them to come with me to this place, and usually I tell them what it's about. And then there are other things that we do, like going to a hospital to show the children an emergency room and what you might expect there. I mean, a simple thing like a papoose board for a very young child can be very frightening. Well, I had them put me in a papoose board so that the children could see that, well, Mr. Rogers did it. It must be okay. You know, because I do think that the children trust me. Because if something's going to hurt, I'll tell them. You know, and if it's not going to hurt, I'll tell them. And practically every program we go somewhere or do something beyond the studio. Then when I come back, we recap that, and then I say, let's just have some make-believe. And then when we go to the neighborhood of make-believe, there's usually something in the previous reality that triggers what happens in make-believe.
Can we first talk about what do you use to transition to the land of
the trolley?
Oh. Yeah, how did that come about?
Well, the trolley was already on the children's corner. It moved along the set just kind of just for movement. It never really went anywhere that I know of. But in Canada, as a matter of fact, this trolley is a Canadian trolley. It was made for the program in Canada.
Can I stop there to change the tape?